Thank you. All lines are now bridged.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the U.S. Core Data for Interoperability Task Force. We will call the meeting to order, starting with a roll call. We have Christina Caraballo.
Here.
Terry O'Malley.
Here.
Stephen Lane.
Here.
Clem McDonald.
Here.
Brett Oliver. Brett on the line. Ken Kawamoto.
Here.
Valerie Gray. Is Valerie on? Laura Heerman Langford. No Laura yet. Leslie Kelly Hall.
Present. Hi.
Hi. Nancy Beaven.
Here.
Kim Nolan.
Hi, I'm here.
Rich Elmore.
Here.
Eric Heflin. Have Eric on? Dan Breeman.
Here.
Mike Peretta.
Here.
And Rob Havasay.
Here.
Okay.
Eric Heflin joined late as well.
I'm sorry, who's that?
Eric Heflin joined partway through the
Great.
Role.
Perfect.
And
did anyone else join? I'm sorry, who was that?
Oliver sent his regrets.
Okay, thank you. Okay, Christina, it's all yours.
Great, thanks. Good afternoon, everyone. So just a review of the agenda today. We're going to go over our meeting goals, review our homework, get the consensus from the group on our proposed data categories. One thing to note is Terry mentioned that we are changing or pointed out that we're going to change to data categories as opposed to stages to align more with ONC, the US CDI. So moving on to the next slide, or on this slide, the charge, you guys all know this one. But today we want to continue the preparation for our preliminary recommendations, which are due March 21st. A couple housekeeping things. Next week on the 21st, we will be presenting to the HITECH committee on all of our updates. So this week is our last week to get our first round of draft recommendations together. If you look in your right-hand corner, you'll see that Adam is live editing for us to kind of see what's going on a little better. Or is that now in the main screen? Okay. No, okay, now it's in the main screen. and we did get confirmation that should we want to form subcommittees going forward, we are allowed to under the task force. And there was one more thing. Oh, we are now at an hour and a half instead of an hour. So you guys are with us for the next hour and a half. So moving on to the next slide. We're actually going to go to the next one. We wanted to just give an overview of the homework. Thank you guys all who submitted your homework assignments. I know it was tough during the HIMSS week, so it was really appreciated. We've consolidated what some of the takeaways were and wanted to present them to the group. There was general consensus on the proposal of the process to advance the data class from proposed to implementation in the US CDI. Some additional questions that arose from the process that required additional discussion were as follows. Widespread deployment and testing, what does this encompass? Is this all stakeholders? Incorporate better information on what the concept of the degree of interoperability means. Clarify stakeholder groups between category one stakeholder, and category two, multiple stakeholders. Clarify what it means to have a primary sponsor to shepherd the data class through the process. criteria for semantic standards, who will coordinate and monitor this work, and we shouldn't only limit evaluation to HL7 and FHIR adoption. So I'm going to pause there and see if there's anything else that anybody would like to add for consideration or offer more clarity.
Christina, are you planning to go through each of the steps? I'm not quite sure where to ask questions.
Yeah, so this was just, yes. So what we have coming up is looking at each of the categories that we've, the three categories that ONC had and our two additional proposed ones, and then we're going to go into actually discussing each with the criteria under them in more detail. So we can always come back to this list if we need to, if people would just like to move on to the next.
I do think it'd be easier to talk about each of them in context with the stage that
sounds
they're
good.
Referring to.
Okay.
Yeah,
so
Christina, this is Harry Keflin. If I could ask a question.
Yes, go ahead, Eric.
For those commenting about the last item there, that we should not limit evaluation to HL7 and FHIR, did they actually comment indicating what should be included?
Adam or Stacey, do you remember who made that comment or if there was any additional information on that?
Christina, this is Rob, and I think I was part of it.
Okay, Rob.
I gave an example in my response, but I did not, I didn't present the list of other alternative organizations that we should include.
Okay, well, what I was wondering then, if it would make sense to, rather than just say, you know, we should not include just those two, instead kind of take the positive side of that discussion and say the evaluation should include the following additional sources.
I would certainly support that, yeah.
Right, but what would they be?
Yeah, well, first thing, this is Eric, the first thing that comes to my mind is IHE International and IHE USA, ANSI and ISO.
I'm Michael Proto here. Oh, sorry. Were you calling on me?
I was.
I'm a little confused by this because, like, FHIR is like, isn't it part of HL7, right? So, when you Google HL7, when you Google FHIR, the first thing that shows up is hl7.org/FHIR. So, saying HL7 and FHIR is a little confusing to me. Like, is it just, you know what I mean?
This is Eric thing. I agree because HL7 is the organization. And under that are things such as HL7 version 2, version 3, and FHIR, and CDA, and the reference information model. So probably if you want to have the organizations listed, it would just be HL7, if that makes
is
sense.
There, yeah, this is Terry, just asking you guys the question. Is there a way just to do a blanket statement about, either a mature maturation model.
Oh, that's a good idea, Terry. This is Eric. I think we actually talked about that exact issue last year for the ISA, about what would be the candidate sources for standards for inclusion within ISA. So perhaps that could guide us here, and I'll try to look that up in the background while we're talking.
Because we'll always leave something out, and there are always new ones coming down the pike. So,
Rich, you have a comment?
Yeah, a question maybe for Christina and Terry. I had the impression from an early conversation that that part of the brief wasn't to talk about transport standards. It was really to just focus on data classes. I don't want to kind of oversimplify what it means to talk about FHIR HL7 and all the other ones that we were just mentioned, but it sounded like that was out of scope. I'm just asking the question, is that part of what we should be including or not?
Yeah, Rich, that's an excellent point. So let's actually go on to the next slide, and we can always come back to comments on this one after we go through kind of what we're doing for our recommendations for next week. So here are our draft categories moving from proposed to USCDI. Reminders that our new ones, we have the two new ones, the category one proposed and category two preparation. Under the preparation, we have identified that this should be the value of the data class has been demonstrated and work to technically specify data class begins. Then under category three, which is emerging, we've identified that this should be areas where technical specification of the data class are complete. There has been technical development of the data class, and the data class is tested informally. Category four, which is the candidate, testing of the data class in production setting is conducted, and then finally, category five, USCDA, CDI, data class is ready to be implemented. So we did want to, we've had general consensus on this in the homework and support, so we just wanted to formally ask the task force if everyone is in agreement that these are our recommendations. Before taking a vote, are there any comments? Stephen, I see your hand up. First.
Yeah, I guess when we started this with the draft, there was a whole process of putting things in queue and what's a higher priority than something else. And that's not incorporated here at all. And I believe that's by intention, right? We're talking about the process here as opposed to the prioritization. Is that correct?
That's correct. We are simply talking about the categories or buckets to move through the process. We're not actually talking about each of the criteria under those categories, but we will break them down later in this conversation.
Yeah, because in the original draft, you know, there was emerging, or I don't have the document in front of me, but, you know, there was the things that are coming up, and then there was all these years. So it seems that it's in the candidate that the various years, the prioritization really is going to happen inside of category four. Is that fair?
Yes.
Great. Thanks.
Yeah, Rich? Actually, if I can just...
Terry, go ahead.
This is Terry. You know, Steve, it's a great question, and I think there's probably going to have to be a prioritization step somewhere, but I think we've sort of assumed or is implicit in this series of categories is that the prioritization happens almost at every step. And it's largely based on, you know, on the size of the or force or impact of the stakeholder groups that are pushing it forward. But I think ONC is going to have to, they're is going to need to be some prioritization step, especially if the work involved overwhelms ONC's bandwidth to help shepherd it and move it forward.
Well, and I don't mean to distract us, but there's also the bandwidth of the industry to actually bring these things to market.
Yeah, and that may actually be the rate limiting step. Yeah.
Rich?
Yeah, a couple of things that I thought we'd talked about that didn't necessarily make these headlines. I just wanted to kind of ask about them. One is the notion that the data exists electronically. And maybe this is in stage two preparation. I'm not sure, but I would think we'd want to call that out. I think it's a pretty important consideration. And that the data class is linked to a use case rather than just being a data class in the abstract.
Yeah, so for the second one in the breakdown, we did have in the category 2 to define the specific use cases. I'm just jumping ahead and looking if we actually put that the data exists electronically. We can take note and make sure that that's captured. But can go ahead, Rich.
I just had one other comment. I don't want to disrupt what you were going to say.
No, we can definitely, Adam can live edit when we get to the slide. So just put a note that we should make sure that we have that data exists electronically.
Okay. And the last comment was just the kind of a general comment about stage 4 and stage 5, and maybe we cover this when we get into the more of the detail. But I worry about testing of data classes in a production settings represents, you know, readiness for US CDI. We have to, I think, one of the failures of interoperability exchange has been that, you know, we've had connectathons, we've had, you know, lots of work in kind of the abstract on what the definitions are of data for exchange. But I don't think that we've done enough generally as an industry in proving that interoperability and with enough experience across a variety of applicable systems. And so I would just ask, you know, if we can maybe set a more kind of a higher bar as a standard for moving out of stage 4 and into stage 5.
Okay, great comment. I'll table that discussion also for when we get to that category 4 slide. Moving on to Ken, you're next to make a comment.
Yeah, thanks. First one, minor comment. I think the value of data class has been demonstrated. I think it probably hasn't been demonstrated. It's probably like case has been made for, or cogent case has been made for value of data class. Because if we had already demonstrated it, we probably are already further down the line. Probably the bigger issue is, I think it's been already touched on, but like in all, it might be the kind of thing we want to put into the, you know, an asterisk or like something that says in all of these steps, this this criteria will be evaluated, and that's that the benefits relative to the costs are favorable and, you know, conducive to moving things forward. So for example, you know, I don't see much specifically talking about the costs associated, you know, whether it's providers having to enter data or it's technically challenging or whatnot. So I think that should be in probably at each step. Is it worth it? So like going from candidate to US CDI, just because people have demonstrated it can be shared doesn't necessarily mean you want to force everyone to share, kind of thing. So I think that benefit to cost notion I think would be just useful to just have all around. And I think it would be also useful to think in all these steps in terms of stakeholders to say we want at least for each step to be at least cost versus benefit neutral for patients and probably providers, because there's a notion of an overall cost versus benefit analysis, but you can imagine an extreme case where something isn't particularly useful or even negative for patients and providers, but is useful for, say, some, you know, for-profit industry. And we should probably, I assume we would say, maybe that's not the right case. So I think having this notion not only of cost-benefit balance for society as a whole, but also specifically for patients and providers, at least not being negative, I think would be a useful thing to try to make sure.
Excellent point. Maybe we can even do an kind of introduction slide for our recommendations. It says in each category, we would like to consider these following things with the cost benefit and the other things that you've mentioned. Moving along, Lauren, you're next to comment.
Laura? Is it Laura?
Oh, I'm sorry. Laura, sorry.
Okay. Just didn't want to step on anybody else. I appreciate all the comments Ken just made, but I also want to get back a little bit on the priority piece. I think it's really important that between Category 1 and Category 2, we do have the sub-bullets so that there is the known expectation that not everything proposed would go directly into preparation. And I'm wondering if that first bullet point under Category 2, where you talk about the value, the benefit cost, would almost be part of that prioritization and from proposed into preparation. And that's the end of my comments.
Yep. And just as a reminder, we have broken these down more. This was just kind of high level what this means for each of the categories. But the movement, advancement from one category to the next, we have on the following slides. So this slide is mainly to say, are we in agreement with these five categories? Leslie, you have a comment?
Yes, thank you. I would like to offer up as a category interest of the public health or emergent issue. I'm thinking of Zika or other public health issues that through either regulatory arm or through, you know, danger to society, there's a data category that's going to jump from 1 to 5. And so that would be another category rather than a value of under consideration or preparation. It'd be like a sixth category, national health, emergent national health. And then I'd also like to make sure that we have consistent understanding of what cost and benefit is and whose cost and whose benefit, because the stakeholders that we are to be representing is much broader than just payers, patients, and providers, but also public health researchers, others. So, and as such, those data stakeholders may be participants in providing data to the ecosystem as well as retrieving information from the electronic health records. So we need to be more broad in our understanding of both the creator and the distributor of content as we review this. Thank you.
So, Leslie, we've discussed that having the red flag to pull out those more immediate issues, and ONC's mentioned, for example, like the opioid. So would you suggest actually putting another category that isn't, that's kind of outside of the progression,
I would. You might have to go through those same steps, but it's not going to be something that's going to be balloted and proposed and balloted and tested necessarily. It might be something that says, look, we have a public health emergency. We need the following fields to be not only gathered here, but made available to public health, made available to the patient. And we have 30 days because we've got an epidemic. So this is another category in my mind, and it should be something that's not triggered very often, but when it is, it's something that we have knowledge of a way to respond to that.
Okay, so the framework exists to support it. That's a really good point.
Yes, actually, Christina, a question for Leslie. Do you think that requires a different category, or do you think it's a fast track through these categories?
I guess it depends on, do we believe that category would have to be initiated through industry consensus or not? I think it's one that says we have a framework that has been agreed upon by the industry, but we have a lever that we're pulling now to make this go. So I think that it could be either or, but my feeling is that it should be, the framework should be able to apply whether this is any one of these, this emergent category or the 1 through 5.
Eric, go ahead with your comment.
So I really like Leslie's idea. I actually was involved with the California pulse activation for the wildfires disaster. And there, you know, people literally move mountains in order to accommodate deploying a system quickly for care of displaced victims of the wildfire disaster. Literally within, you know, hours or days, entire organizations like the VHA and CVS and Walgreens and Cerner and Epic and others had actually changed their entire approaches to allow things like that to occur. But I do not think this can be done by progressing through all these stages. Like, for example, going from candidate to or from emerging to candidate probably entails standards bodies and others as well, too. So I do think I really actually am pretty excited about Leslie's idea of having a fast track, but I don't think it's realistic for that to go through all five of these steps. I think we need to have a parallel process of an emergent emergency category for adoption. And it could use, for example, something like HLS or FHIR, which has ability on some of the vocabularies for the vocabulary to be extensible. So we essentially could, rather than trying to go through all these steps of convening and reaching consensus and so on, of essentially establishing through some type of an expedited process, you know, here's a vocabulary we'll use in response to this public health disaster, which I'm envisioning would occur within, you know, a few days, not a few weeks or months or years. The other two comments I have, very briefly, I read ahead, and I think this slide is confusing, and we should actually just take out all the sub-bullets, because I think a lot of us, a lot of our comments were actually related to how the sub-bullets on slide number four here are kind of imperfectly convey what's actually in the more detailed slides later in the deck. So I would just suggest we just make this this slide just have the category one, two, three, and four with no sub-bullets to avoid future confusion by others that also read this. And then a final comment I have is some of this does sound very much like it could build on the work that we did for the ISA, Interoperability Standards Advisory, that is. And there they actually have specifically a discussion about maturity and how to identify which organization or which data standard could go through and be assessed against which maturity level. And there's even a nice table. I put a link in the chat that points to it. And they do talk about a couple of things we really are just briefly touching on. I think we'll touch on later, but including standards process maturity, implementation maturity, adoption level, whether it's federally required, cost, and test tool availability.
Thank you, Eric. Clem?
Well, I have comments on a couple. I actually am really supportive of all of Eric's comments, except maybe the first one. And it relates actually to the previous discussion that I don't think it's realistic to think in a month time you can get anything into a standard working any and throughout the country. It takes years typically. But I think Eric's point about the emergency things, what you really want to do is get the major categories working now so when emergencies come up, you can switch them around. I mean, that's what happened when they turned on these systems. These were systems that actually had data and had standards and stuff in them. So, and the other part is that I think you have to take these super emergency things and do a different pathway. People can't install new systems and all that in that kind of time frame under any circumstances. So I think it needs a different kind of pathway to talk about emergency stuff. But the more we get things to work all the time, the better off we'll be when an emergency happens. So the faster we get through some of the important important big categories, the better off we'll be.
Okay. Terry, did you have anything to add on this? I think this is a really good discussion, and it sounds like the group would also like to see the second category for the fast tracking. I just see, Michael, your hand just came up.
Yeah, this is adding to, I think it was Eric's point. If we do end up with a mechanism to expedite certain data classes, do we have another mechanism to term them so this is no longer emergency, and then it can go back to the front of the queue? or I'm not really sure how that would work, but anyway, that was just my thought.
Yep. In the interest of time, let's table it, and we can at least identify that the task force has said that there needs to be another category, but let's get through the general process now, if that's okay with everyone. So I think we were going to just take a quick vote on the actual categories, or we can skip that. ONC, I'll kind of leave that to you on what we should do, Adam or Stacy.
This is Adam. I guess unless there are very strong exceptions to these categories that would apply to the normal general process, I would suggest that we can move on, or perhaps we can postpone that to after we go through the individual slides for the stages or categories.
Perfect. Thanks, Adam. So then let's go ahead and move on to the next slide. So the next slide is category one, which is proposed. In this, any data class ONC receives via feedback process that lacks the demonstrated value or technical progress is to be placed at a more advanced stage is to be placed here. So this would be a HL7 standard level that does not apply. To advance to stage two or category two, which is preparation, the data class must do the following. Demonstrate wide scale value to at least one of the following. First, a large number of patients. Second, a large number of caregivers. Or third, multiple non-patient caregiver stakeholder groups. And then you'd get bonus points for it having relevance to the government policy priorities. Thought process here is that this is essentially a catch-all for proposed data classes that haven't begun any technical development or demonstrated the sufficient value to be considered. In other words, we received your feedback, but you didn't give us enough to take any action. Specific definitions of value would be determined or would be to be determined. So I see hands up. So going right into first up, we have Rich.
Yeah. Question about whether or not we want to make this a catch-all bucket or if we want to ensure the proposed has some serious chance of making its way through these steps. I worry about, just becoming a collection point. The funnel can exist outside of the process, I think, to the extent that people make suggestions. But to get into proposed, it ought to be, have a serious chance of making its way through the process. That's point one. I think we talked earlier about this, these HL7 standards bullets, and I think to the point that Eric made earlier, to use the model of ISO where they talked about maturity, it isn't the same kind of maturity, but nevertheless, I think that might be a better way to frame this and than to frame it in terms of a transport standard, which may in fact be out of scope for what we're doing. And then in terms of the advance to stage two preparation, it feels like we need to be more specific. We need to set a kind of a more concrete bar. I'm afraid that most data classes that we could think of could find a way to pass these tests. I mean, it just seems like we ought to be providing more directive guidance on what is going to make it pass from proposed to stage two than large ends.
The great comments. Do you have, what would you propose What do you think would be a reasonable bar or one of the many bars?
Let me think about that, and maybe I'll come back with and raise my hand again.
So we also took a step back because we had the more in-depth criteria and it was kind of all getting lost. So I think it's a really good point, Rich, but I think that might be our next step. But just defining an outline here so that we can build upon it. And then with the getting through proposed or not just being a bucket that doesn't exist, you did mention the ISA, and do you think that would be maybe a dotted line to the ISA so that it continues to generate momentum or be looked at?
No, well, so first of all, we shouldn't confuse. So ISA is a collection of standards, almost like a catalog of standards, if you will. And all I was trying to do was to reinforce the point I think that Eric had made earlier, which was that, you know, we can take a page from that playbook, which was to say there's some form of expressing maturity for these data classes. They are not standards in the same way that are expressed in the ISA. So I don't think that a direct link to ISA would service well in this case. But it was more the way in which we express maturity, I think, would be useful.
Okay. Clem?
Yeah, first I wanted to verify the class one is low and it goes up, it gets stronger, right? One isn't the best class to be in. Is that correct? And then I have a couple comments. Class category one is the lowest, the least successful candidate, right?
Well, I think, Clem, we've been...
It's the beginning of the journey.
Yeah, okay. I just wanted to clarify that. So when you're higher, you're better off. You know, the issues here are a couple things. I think we ought to say something about you got to be able to define the class. If this is class of data. We're not talking about message standards or things like that, I don't think. You've got to be able to define it. I think that implies it is a class. It's not just give me the diastolic blood pressure. I'd like to know other people's thought on this. If you have to define the class, that already is a bar. You know, I think you have to say what it is so people can know when they see one that that's one of them. That would be what I'd add to the class. And I agree with Eric's position. I also agree with it. It'd be nice to specify this tighter. But one of the things, if we don't say what it really is in a way that others can understand and discuss, there's going to be problems.
Yes, this is Terry. Just that made me think of two things. One, that the data class, you know, will we know it when we see it? There are really sort of two pieces to that. One, for category one, maybe, Clem, to your point, you've got to have enough of a constellation of data elements to be a recognizable class that it actually, and this gets back to the use case issue of tying them to use cases. You know, do you have enough data to actually move a use case or series of use
cases?
Well,
yeah, I support what you're saying. I mean, you got to be able to have a pile of stuff that looks like it is something.
Yeah.
And I think you have to be able to identify some examples, too, to make it easy to digest.
And then the next step would be really precisely defining that as the work of the preparation stage. But you've got to have something that looks like a data class to get out of proposed. Is that what you're saying, Clem? Is that
well,
right?
I almost think you should say something that looks like a data class before you propose it. Otherwise, we're just spending time circling. No one will know what people are talking about. I mean, it should be a fundamental. What do I mean? I don't know what I mean. Well, forget it. Go back and think about it some more. And it should be able to give examples of what it is. You know, it's the PDQPHQ9, or it's the this, or it's this set of things like this. I don't know where we'll get anywhere if we just say it's, I want good stuff. I mean, you know, it's not decidable.
Do you mean, does it, Does it have to be a data class tied to a use case? Do we have to have consider them together?
Well, I'm not as intense about use cases. I just like to be able to know what everybody's talking about when they ask for something or when they're going to grade it up. So at least I think you got to have some examples that exemplify and describe and exemplify what you're talking about. Otherwise, you know, it's hopeless. I don't think use case is enough. You know, like you could say, I have a use case that I want to be able to take care of any kind of problems that's an emergency. Well, you know, what is that? What does that include?
Yeah, we might want a better use case. But am I understanding right that for category one proposed, people agree that this needs to be more clearer than just a wide open door where you can put anything in you want. You want to have some criteria to get into proposed, and that is that you have something that starts to look like a data class. And then we have to define what we mean by data class. Yeah,
that's what I'd say.
This is Terry again. So the countervailing argument to that is that we wanted the first step to really be almost barrier-free to encourage people who have an interoperability need they haven't brought it forward for whatever reason, to just give them an unimpeded path to get that interoperability need out so other people can see it.
Well, just to clarify, are we talking about data classes, data content, or the whole business of interoperability, which is a whole bigger, much bigger spectrum?
We're
classes
starting,
of data.
Yeah, we're starting with the data classes. Yeah.
Interoperability is
going
to get into bigger things and important things, but it's not the same.
That's where we hope to go, right?
There's a lot of hands up, too, so I want to make sure we get to others' comments. Ken?
Great, thanks. A few comments. One is in terms of identifying this notion of value, I think we should be, this is going to be, I think, the key thing, right? This is where we make the cost-benefit analysis. I would recommend we tighten this a little bit. One is that, I wouldn't necessarily say it's for a large number of patients. I think it's just total value, right? Like, if there's something that affects a 1,000 of us, but it could make the difference between life or death, I think we should consider that much more highly than something that, is a tiny thing for a million patients kind of thing. I think also, one suggestion for a notion of what the benefit is, we might want to consider something like quality adjusted life years saved kind of thing, just so we're clear on, because one of the things we need to do is prioritize, and that means we need a common metric that we weigh different potential things we could work on against each other. So that's one approach, although it does have, interesting side effects. Like it definitely promotes focus on children and things like that, which I think is a good idea, but, it is just a side effect of that. I think other thing is I would be a little bit careful about what we consider to be other stakeholder groups and maybe be a little bit more explicit. And maybe the way to do that is to just say, hey, other stakeholder groups needs, let's say, pharma or, for-profit other businesses who see an opportunity in healthcare. Like, that's great, but we need to make sure that it's, we're very careful when, maybe it's just saying like, patients and their caregivers just come first period kind of thing. And hopefully it's a win-win-win for everyone, right? Like there's a lot of those opportunities, but I think we just need to be careful. Like if we say, hey, we're just going to make it so this kind of information is shared, but that we prioritize the cases that are best for us in our role as patients.
Thank you for that comment. Eric?
I'll try to be very brief. So I actually think we were kind of commingling a couple of concepts in the discussion we just have had on slide 6. And I think it might be useful for us to separate those. One concept is how things get into this category. The second concept is what's in the category. And third is how do they get out of this category. And I think it might be useful to clearly discern those. And I'm really in favor of what I think was the original concept here, which is that this category be the initial input into the process that has no barriers for entry other than someone reaching out and perhaps submitting a proposed idea, perhaps in a standard templatized format. So there's some administrative burden reduction. And then things are assessed, and then they do not exit this category until they meet the criteria that a lot of the criteria we've just been talking about. And that's it for my comments.
Thank you, Eric. Stephen?
Yeah, one comment, response to Ken. You know, we talked, I think, last time or the time before about this whole notion of quality-adjusted life years and the challenge that, you know, patients, you know, and others are going to want data for all sorts of reasons that we can't predict. And I think we agreed that it was difficult for us, you know, as a group or for ONC to really say what is the value. You know, I mean, life, death, life years, that may be a value, but for sure for most of us, but there are other values as well. So I would just caution us about thinking that we can actually define that. The other thing, just a stylistic thing, where we have the large N of patients, large N of caregivers, we can just use the word number instead of N, and I think it makes this a little bit more understandable to lay people.
Okay. Leslie?
Yeah, I struggled a little bit between do we accommodate data sets for all stakeholders or do we have to identify separate stakeholders with a different point of entry. For instance, if a patient is generating data, they're likely not to have a sponsor who's going to see that through a defined process. There's no natural sponsor for the patients. However, if you look at critical data like this is a finding, an observation, a result, that information could also be generated by a patient. And so the structure should be able to be accommodating data classes irrespective of the stakeholder if we identify the stakeholders as equal. If we choose not to identify the patient as an equal stakeholder, then we have to think about another process, because that point of entry will be not be able to be met in many cases because there is no natural sponsor. So I do lean towards making sure the stakeholder is somehow identified, the patient is somehow identified, that when we go through this and we say, well, if I was a patient generating this data, would it make it through this process? And the answer should be yes. So one, it's just one way to decide how the data gets through. Also, I think that these steps are process steps, and so when we talk about proposed, I think what we're saying is an applicant process versus this is proposed. It's really someone who's applying to have this considered. Thank you.
Yeah. And we originally had identified as opposed to proposed, and I don't know if we want to go back to identified, because again, Terry mentioned the idea was to just at least capture everything, just so we could start seeing if multiple people were asking for the same thing or multiple stakeholders. Make sure we get everyone's comments in. So Nancy, I see your hand up.
Thank you. I'm a little confused by the wording of the third, at least one of, so a large number of patients, a large number of caregivers, multiple non-patient caregiver stakeholders? Does that mean, I don't know if that means there has to be like a caregiver group and a payer, so that would be multiple, or if multiple caregiver stakeholder groups. I'm not sure if there's a better way to word that, but that particular text is a little confusing for me. Can you help me understand the intent?
Yeah, I can let Terry talk as well, but my thoughts are that we are with the USCDI trying to hit that core set of data that's going to impact the greatest number of people on a national level. So I think that's where we've got that large number. We can revisit that. Terry, did you want to add to that at all on our thinking process, thought process?
I guess my question is multiple, would like three payers be multiple stakeholder groups, or does multiple mean it has to be like a payer and a caregiver, or I'm not sure where the isn't clear to me what the multiple is. Multiple payers and caregivers.
I think it was an attempt to somehow quantify value, and nothing beyond that. So I wouldn't put any precision on more than one or three.
So I wasn't sure if it meant more than one or it meant more than one combination.
Terry, can I interject real quick? This is Adam from ONC. So this actually aligns a little bit with something I think Ken mentioned. I do agree that it could be clarified, Nancy. The intent, I think, was really to get beyond, you know, for anything that's not a large number of patients or a large number of caregivers, it was just that any other, I guess, large stakeholder group, so, you know, three payers, I guess, you know, would not really apply here. It'd have to be, you know, a payer and then, you know, another, I don't know, public health group. So they're neither, you know, directly patient or directly caregiver, and it would take more than one of those groups.
So we have four more stages to get through, so I'm going to move on to the next slide, but I do see Clem has a comment. So after Clem's comment, okay, we'll move on to the next.
So I wanted to support and maybe clarify the idea that a data class should be supported regardless of where it comes from. But I just want to make sure that the form it comes in, it will be important to the success of the transmission. So, for example, if a patient had a lab result that they could send, or they had a home glucose that they could send from a machine, that'll work fine. But if they just send a note, you know, and as text, it won't work as well because no one will be able to know what it is. So I just want to be sure that those distinctions are alive.
Okay, thank you. Adam, can we move on to the next slide? So the next category to discuss is the preparation. This is what we've identified so far. The data class has demonstrated value as defined in category one. The HL7 standard level is in development. And then to advance to stage category three, which is emerging, the data class must clearly define the scope of the data class, including the following. First, names, definitions, and data formats, vocabulary of proposed data elements. And then if the choice of a data format is between computable and non-computable, there must be justification for the selection of non-computable. Second, it would be to define specific use cases for multiple stakeholders, including any that would use or benefit from the implementation of the data class. And third, designate a primary sponsor to shepherd the data class through the process. Our thought process here is that this is the time when the real technical work and assessment begins. Data class proposers must show in detail what data elements make up the data class, what data is being collected, and in what forms or vocabularies. They must also provide detailed use cases for anyone who will use that data. And I see Eric has his hand up. Go ahead, Eric.
So I like this in principle. The only thing I would add is to avoid real-world interoperability issues that we've all been victim to over the years, is that the onus should be on the proposer to also demonstrate how an existing data class does not already solve this issue. And the intent would be to avoid duplicate overlapping data classes, which obviously exist heavily out there in industry now and always cause problems. For example, the Yelp Exchange has a data class for the purpose of use. HL7 created their own virtually parallel data class that's incompatible, even though it has the same conceptual meaning. So I think it'd be good to avoid similar situations as that.
Thank you, Eric. Rob?
Yeah, thank you. One general comment, and then I kind of agree with Eric except for one point. When I started looking at these slides, and I'm looking now as we're going from stage one to stage two to stage three, based on a comment someone said earlier, I really think we could increase clarity if we drew this not as sort of bullets under stages, but as a diagram where the transition between stages, we have the input criteria, the output criteria. So what's required to get into stage two, what's required to get out of stage two? As I started thinking about that, and I forget who said it earlier, that really started to make this much easier for me to follow. And I'm going to try and redraw this for my own use that way, and maybe it'll help others. Based on what Eric just said, I like the idea of reducing duplication, but I'm not sure our role is to prevent innovation, right, and to prevent new standards coming where they may replace old ones. So I would amend just a word or two in something Eric said, right? Demonstrate that this is not a duplicate, or if it is, how is it better, or how is it advancing whatever it is that they're proposing? Thank you.
And
this is Eric. I'll
I do
take
have
that
a
as
question.
A friendly amendment. Sorry, Kelly. Or Christina.
This is Christina, and I did have a question of clarity around that. So, I mean, for this, you would still need, this is for inclusion in the US CDI, so even if a data class existed, and if you wanted it included in the US CDI, you still have to put it through this process? I mean, it might go through pretty quickly, but I don't know that it would be separate. Maybe putting it, is what you're saying, identify that it exists or doesn't exist as a reference to move through the US CDI? Just want to make sure I understand that properly.
Well, this is already building on Rob's idea. I think that's a good way of couching it. That's part of the proposal or the evaluation process to go from stage two to three. It should be determined if the data class being proposed is unique or duplicate, or you know, apparently duplicative or overlapping. And if it is duplicative and overlapping, that it should be determined if this is an innovation that improves the data. One example that occurs to me that I saw last week was that the HL7 FHIR definition of an organization type is very inconsistent, where it goes down to extremely fine-grained levels of detail for some categories of organizations. And yet, for something like a government entity, essentially has just a very broad stroke of a category, where essentially all government entities are one category, whereas it seems like that certainly needs more resolution. So in that case, someone could propose that the organization data type be included to have a more consistent level of granularity as an innovation.
Thank you, Eric. Seeing no more hands up, unless Terry, you have would like to make any more comments, I think we can move on to the next category.
Let's go.
Okay.
So I had my hand up, but I didn't push the button right. This is Clem. Could I just comment quickly? Because I like this in general. I just don't know what we really mean by primary sponsor. Whose obligation? Is that sponsor from the organization proposing it? Is that one of us? And then the specific use cases might be a little bit overburdened. I think you just have to say who's going to use it and why or how, because some proposers may not know the way to do the formal use case business. And I think we're talking about, I don't think of a single code system as a class. I don't know if other people do. That's what Eric was kind of talking about a minute ago.
Adam, can we move on to the next slide while I capture your notes? Okay, so the next category, category three, is emerging. The data class has been defined and its future applications demonstrated. The HL7 standard level is draft, FHIR maturity level or equivalent model zero. To advance to stage four, or category four, which is candidate, the data class must do the following: progress technically to be testable in production settings, for example, testing at dev days or connectathon type events in the emerging level, not candidate level. Readiness for production setting testing requires that data can be tested for all mature transport standards in a curated list, for example, FHIR and CCDA. It requires that it is being collected nationwide and there are no barriers to collection where it may not be, and that known cost barriers to implementation and workflow issues have been theoretically mitigated. And then we have just the systematic standards as a placeholder here. Our thought process on this was that technical work is focused on preparing the data class to be tested in the production setting and to meet technical requirements essential to interoperability. Going right into comments, Eric?
One additional item for both Category 3 items transitioning to Category 4, as well as for Category 5, or four items transitioning to Category 5, would be whether or not this is required by a federal mandate.
And Eric, this is Terry.
Yep.
Can you clarify that a little bit? No. Is that a good thing or a bad thing or
helps
or hurts?
Right, I understand your question. I realized as you're asking I was ambiguous. So that one of the elements assessed to determine if a given data class goes from Category 3 into Category 4 would be whether or not that data class is mandated by federal requirements. And if the data class is mandated, then that's taken into account as a positive factor as far as that item moving from Category 3 to Category 4.
Eric, that's a good point. In the Category 1 under the proposed, we had the bonus points for relevance to government policy priority. Maybe we put that as a bonus category or bonus points in each of the categories.
Great idea. Agreed. And this also might help address an excellent suggestion from Leslie Kelly Hall about some type of an expedited process for public health emergencies.
So that's actually a good point, too. Go ahead.
I don't think that this process will ever serve the needs of a public health emergency. To the extent that there's an emerging concern about a particular disease or some other, you know, public health concern that needs to be addressed, this is still going to be a multi-year process. It's not going to be a fast process. And so I think it's a bit of a mistake to suggest that I think it's a gap in what's needed outside of USCDI, but I just can't see a way that if we've got a real public health emergency, that this is a vehicle for addressing an imminent, you know, public health emergency.
I think the questions are going to be asked, right? Whether or not it happens in days or weeks, do we have this already electronically? Is there a standard that can meet it? Do we have a de facto use case that can be applied? So I think some of it could be, but it's and maybe that's the test to see if it's a valuable process.
Yeah, so I mean, I think that this process, and I'd welcome other opinions on this. I think there's some comments later on this topic, which is, what is the cycle time on this? But I think it's measured in terms of many years, just the reality of going through these stages and getting out deployed systems to be able to take advantage of what's defined in a USCDI. So whether that's 5 years or 8 years, I don't think it's weeks or months. And I'm not sure, I don't think that's what you were saying, Leslie, but I just wanted to make sure that we're not confusing things by suggesting that a process that's in that kind of cycle time is going to address an imminent public health emergency.
Right.
Stephen, did you have a comment to add? Stephen, you might be on mute.
Oh, sorry about that. Like Eric, I was involved in some of the work that we did locally in California around the emergencies. And you know, while very exciting and satisfying, I agree that this is a really different process that we're talking about. I mean, but there's not going to be some new data type that's going to show up in a public health emergency, most likely. I mean, I get this notion of disease X and being prepared and whatnot, but I don't think that we need to confuse these two issues. I think we need to create a deliberative process that can move as quickly as possible here. But I agree that it seems unrealistic that this is going to be a process that could move in hours to days as opposed to months to years.
Great. So I agree that this is an important discussion, and we've identified it as a category or subcategory that we need to incorporate. We have about 20 minutes left and a couple more things to get through. So seeing no hands up, I'm going to go ahead and move to category four, which is candidate.
There's something wrong with my hand wave. It says it's up on the screen. And I
saw you up and then go down. So go ahead.
I mean, yeah, I think these three things, well, firstly, I agreed with what Elmar said completely, but these three things here below readiness, I think, are way too severe. Why should it have to be tested on all mature transports? I mean, heck, NCPDP is running now. It doesn't run on all three transports, or it's collected in nationwide. Man, by the time that's happening, why bother going through this process? It's done. So I think these sub-bullets are really too tough and should be softened if it's emerging. That's all I got.
Any other thoughts on emerging, or can we move on to the candidate? So while Adam's typing up.
And Christina, will
go ahead.
We'll come back. I can't remember whose comment it was. We will come back with a sort of a format of how do you get into the category, how do you get out of it, and what are you while you're in it? I think that's a helpful frame. Sorry for interrupting.
Oh, yeah, we have a lot to go through after this call. So moving on to the candidate, the data class has achieved technical level that can be tested in production settings. HL7 standard level is trial use, fire maturity level, or equivalent maturity model, 1 to 5. To advance to stage 5 or the USCDI, the data class must do the following. Barriers to nationwide implementation have been mitigated and achieve normative status. Thought process here is data class has to be 100% ready to be implemented to advance to the USCDI. The initial placement is sooner candidate status, for example, 2019 or later, for example, 2021, will depend on where data class is in the testing maturity level process. And Eric, you're the first with your hand up.
So I think this is good. The only thing I would suggest is on the second sub-bullet about barriers to nationwide implementation have been mitigated, that's actually defined. For example, a test tool exists to validate the structure and of the data class and the value set associated with that data class.
Thank you, Eric. Clem?
Again, I think we're being too mean. So if you've achieved normative status, you're at 5 in FHIR. So there's some inconsistency there. Maybe you don't need 4 levels. And you're basically saying, and the other part about it is if ANC doesn't sort of push something, it may never achieve a real high status. But I just think it's pretty tough. Barriers must be mitigated. That definition about that would be helpful. But the achieved normative status, I think, is contradictory to what you say about 1 to 5 as maturity.
Thank you, Clem. Laura?
Yes, I just wanted to agree with Clem on what he's saying, because when I look at what we've said on these last two with these barriers or, you know, how you must advance, I think we have to go back and look at what are those data elements that are the classes that are already part of the USCDI, and do they even match this? Because I'm not sure they do.
Yeah, here,
so here. Candidate in, you know, incoming things, we're making it really hard.
Sometimes I think we're mixing up the standard message structure specification and the content, or maybe not, but I just want to be sure we aren't.
Yeah, Clem, the reference to HL7 and FHIR on the maturity level was really an analogy ranking how data classes are maturing rather than meeting those particular transport standards. So
okay, that's helpful.
It is confusing.
But 5 is, you don't get the normative until you're at 5, or maybe it's above.
Okay.
Just to clarify that.
Yeah.
Eric, you have a comment? Eric, are you on mute?
Sorry about that. I was double muted. So to build on what others just said, which to me also makes sense, maybe we could modify the first sentence to state that in stage 4, they are receiving testing in pilot or limited production settings, and in stage 5, that they are in full production use by multiple organizations.
So, Eric, it's Terry. If I understand that right, that you're softening the step to USCDI by saying you're going from test to some full production, but not, you're not necessarily
sort of
still ready to do everywhere.
Okay.
Kind of clarifying more than necessarily loosening or softening, because right here the language states that it can be tested in production settings in the first sentence. And so I'm suggesting, I guess in a way, that it's a little harder and a little clearer in that stating instead that it is being tested in pilots. And then for the next stage, that is in production use by multiple organizations for stage 5 in a production environment.
Clem?
I think there's sort of a backwards cause and effect a problem here, because what the UCDI is going to do is induce the, if it gets to a high level, it'll induce the implementation of it across the country. And it kind of, this sort of sound, getting more and more sound like, if you get it introduced across the whole country, then we'll say, yeah, you've done it. That's not necessarily what we want. Getting back to some of the current ones, I think NCPDT's standard wasn't used hardly at all until it was required. So it's a tension, but I do think we have to be sensitive to the fact that this is the goal, is to identify something that would be really good to have, and how can we make it happen sooner by sort of public pressure. Whereas if we got to have it done before we can bring it to a level that would get public pressure, it's kind of too late.
Thank you, Clem. Leslie, I just saw your hand go up.
Yeah, I agree with Clem. I think one way to think about this too is where there is a need for the data, but there are many competing ways to do it, and someone needs to act as an arbitrator. That could be one other condition, and I'm not sure which stage that fits in, but it could be this one where there's 5 different ways to do the same thing, and it's a burden on the industry. As a result of those 5, let's come to some agreement.
Thank you, Leslie. I don't see any more comments for this slide. In the interest of time, can we move on to the next?
Sorry, I didn't have my hand up. I just want to make sure. I think this is an area where normative status, I think is one part of moving on to stage 5. But having kind of clear proven production use in production settings across a large number of commercially available systems, I think it should be kind of an explicit criteria for stage 5.
But if they've gotten there, why do we need any more encouragement? That's my big tension on this stuff. Are we doing any good? We're gonna bless what's happened.
Well, we're gonna bless what's happened, perhaps technically in terms of proof, but not necessarily what's being used in a national scale. I think that. That's the expectation of stage 5, is that you're moving from something that you know will work to something that is going to be used at national scale.
Okay, that's a good distinction.
I just don't think a normative standard is enough. I think you need to have great confidence that in production across a reasonable number of, commercially available, whatever the applicable systems are in this case, that it's proven itself before it moves to stage 5.
Thank you, Rich. Laura, do you have a comment?
Yeah, I wanted to comment because I'm not sure I entirely agree that I'm kind of with Clem on this one again. I think that if it's already in use, what's the purpose of even doing this? I think that, and I understand the need about it being technically ready and that we're able to adopt it, but yet I push the envelope on that. I think people can get to the point of ready to adopt it if it's put out in a, almost a regulatory way. And so saying that it's already in use and that it's already being assumed in things, I don't think is very helpful. So I just wanted to push back on that a little bit.
So I wonder if it falls under one of our more specific criteria as we build this out for the technical requirements.
Well, if we had some clarity on what this ICE is supposed to do, we could maybe resolve this better. I had the impression it was to sort of push a little bit on the envelope. And I you know, there's some yings and yangs here, but if everybody's using it or it's very, very solid, it'll all happen anyway.
See, no more comments. Let's move. Go ahead.
I would just want to just reemphasize that, you know, I think where we have failed as an industry is having taken all the steps necessary to really validate this in production before we declare victory. And we kind of declare victory before we've gotten to national scale in terms of use. And I think that those are, you know, distinct steps that have to be followed. Which category they, which stage they fall into, I mean, we can have that discussion. But I think until you have something that you know works, that's been deployed and implemented in a number of different, you know, relevant system settings, you're not in a position to talk about striving for nationwide adoption. So I just want to make sure that we're not getting ahead of ourselves, as we have done as an industry time and again.
This is Nancy. I'm sorry, I can't put my hand up, but I think the other thing is consistency. So for me, we've done a lot of things with standards, but not gotten to that last step of striving for consistency across the standard and how it's implemented. So I just don't want to make sure we don't lose sight of that in this process.
Yeah, hear, hear.
Laura, go ahead.
Yeah. I'll be quick. I think we're on to something a little bit different here. I think there's the stages kind of to the point of implementation, but with what the last couple of speakers are talking about is don't claim victory until we know that it's taken place. There's almost a stage six, perhaps, that is not related about being ready to be implemented in real life, as our stage five is currently saying, but that it is in real life and it is had uptake, you know, it has had uptake and it is being used. That's almost a different thing, and I completely agree with saying that.
Do you think that happens after it gets into USCDI or before?
Maybe it could be after, but I think it's a stage that we need to recognize, because I agree with the speaker that was saying that we often claim victory perhaps a little too soon. And so acknowledging and saying that, you know, we can go so far, but until it's actually implemented, it's only gone so far.
But does UCDI, is it goal to help it get to getting implemented, or is it goal to just describe what has happened in history?
I'm going to, Leslie, to answer Clem's comment, I think that the goal is, remember, it's something that federal agencies will point to for people to use in different initiatives, just answering that question really quickly. But moving,
I think that,
we have to go to go ahead, Leslie.
I just think what we're talking about is something that works, and now we want it to go to scale, and it goes to scale because now it's easy to use, it's findable, new stakeholders can use it. And so I think it's a scale step that we're talking about. And maybe that helps us to differentiate from the ISA that says it can be used, it's mature, it's done, and now government comes in and says, good, let's move it to scale because the payers are now coming on board, or the patients are now coming on board, or research is now coming on board. This will be the item to scale.
Christina, can I just read a sentence from the draft USCDI rec document real quick?
Hey Adam,
yes,
this is
you.
Lauren. Before you do that, we do have to go to public comment now. Can we just hold on that for 1 second?
Sure.
And operator, can you open the line, please?
If you would like to make a public comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the queue. You may press star 2 if you would like to remove your comment from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys.
Okay, and we'd just like to remind everyone to please keep your comments to no longer than 3 minutes. Operator, do we have any comments in the queue at this time?
There are no comments at this time.
Okay, thank you. I'm sorry, Adam, I'll turn it back to you.
Okay, sure. Thanks, Lauren. So just real quick, this is from the USCDI draft document. The draft USCDI and its proposed expansion process aim to achieve the goals set forth in the Cures Act by specifying a common set of data classes that are required for interoperable exchange and identifying a predictable, transparent, and collaborative process for achieving those goals. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Adam.
Well, we're certainly transparent. I don't know if we're clear yet, but we're getting there. Okay.
Can we move? I'm going to get as much as we can in. Can we move to the next slide, which is category 5, the data class is fully ready to be implemented in the real-life setting, HL7 standard level, normative fire to maturity level 6. You guys can read that. And do we have any comments on this? Eric? Eric, I saw your hand go up and down. Okay. Clem?
Oh, that's odd. I put my hand up and it went down on its own. So this is Eric. So I do like the model that standards bodies often use to self-assess the maturity of something. I think that can inform us. And I also like the model in the ISA where they actually specifically talk about data classes and how they can mature or what defines a definition of them being part of, say, Category 5 in this case. And that includes those factors I mentioned before, which I won't repeat now, but it includes, for example, adoption level, cost, and test tool availability and similar requirements.
Thank you, Eric. Clem?
Well, it's back to the same thread. You know, I just heard what the goals were, is to get this stuff adopted. I think we've got to either couch the description of what we're doing a little bit differently, or we got to lower the bar a bit, because if we don't declare something's ready to use until it's met all these criteria, although this 5 is actually a little less than 4, I think, it's fully ready to be implemented. 4 it sounded like it already was. I think we got to tweak this so that we achieve some progress faster than normal, you know, inertia would do. But still having some validity to what choices we make.
Thank you. Do we have time for one more comment? I do see it's 5:00. Laura, go ahead.
Thank you. Sorry, I'll be quick. I'm playing tennis with Clem. I feel like I agree with what he says. We need to make this achievable. We need to make it doable. But yet I also, again, don't want to make it just be that we rubber stamp everything that's already being done. And so we need to make sure that it has just enough in there that can push and encourage people to get to better interoperability than we already have.
I don't disagree.
Thank you, Laura. So we will be sending out a revised copy of some of what's been discussed and recommendations that we will be presenting next week. We do not have a call as of today prior to that. So look for that as homework. Terry, did you want to add anything else that we'll be sending along or anything else in general?
No, just any suggestions you have for our draft proposal presentation? Any points you think we should bring up besides the structure that we've discussed would be gratefully acknowledged and appreciated.
I just think being very clear about the scope that we've taken on at this stage in the process, because again, I think it's more focused than I think some people might have assumed we would be doing based on the draft USCDI that was posted.
Yeah, thank you. That's good.
Lauren, I think we are ready to...
Great. Thanks, Terry. Thanks, Christina. If there's nothing else, we will adjourn, and we'll talk soon.
Thanks, everyone.
Everyone. Goodbye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you.